back at my favorite interview site, the Pleasant Street Tea Company. I'm with Karen Bell now, who is the chairperson of the Gloucester Democratic Committee. And Karen, welcome and nice to meet you.
Thank you very much, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here to meet you, to learn more about your background, and also to, you know, share anything I can about what we're doing, and about me personally, if you want more information.
I do. We do want to get into that, and then we'll get into other things about the local Democratic Committee. But first of all, a little background as to how you got where you are.
Okay. Well, like many people, I first came to Gloucester because of my late husband, whom I married in 1970, so I have been coming here for summers and extended periods and vacations and family events for well over 40 years. But 8 years ago, he and I moved to Gloucester when he retired, and I decided I probably also wanted to change, and when his father died, and we bought the house that he had grown up in as a child, mm-hmm. which overlooks the Bass Rocks Golf Club.
Oh, that's tough.
And so I have, instead, my career was always in public health and, you know, epidemiology, thinking about numbers and health risks, how to, interventions, both domestically and internationally, that can improve the lives of vulnerable people. You know, everywhere. I worked in maternal and child health. I've done some teaching, research, advocacy. And when, after moving to Gloucester and deciding I probably didn't want to commute to a full-time job in the, you know, closer to Boston, I volunteered for the Obama campaign and very quickly became introduced to people who needed all sorts of help, including some of the help that I could provide, you know, mainly because I like to work with data sets and think about people and numbers, and so it was a very easy transition for me.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Wellesley High School, and after that I went to Harvard College as an undergrad, and then spent 4 years in Chile with my husband. I studied and actually got a degree in public health education at the University of Chile. Did some other things there. This was when Allende was elected and then overthrown, and then there was a military dictatorship. It was also a country where there were 17 different political parties when we arrived. And within about 5 minutes of talking to almost anyone, you could pretty much identify their party affiliation. And this was an incredibly interesting time because it was the first time during the Cold War that a president had been elected democratically who said he wanted to transform the country into more of a socialist direction, which very much alarmed the United States. And there's a whole history behind it that I'm not going to go into.
No, let's bring it back to a little bit locally. Well, that's wonderful.
Well, it gives you a tremendous background. I'm an Army brat, so I grew up in many different communities and saw a lot, too. And it helps with the educational process. So tell me about the Democratic Committee here in Gloucester, maybe the makeup of it, what its mission is, what its goals is, and maybe what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm the overall chair of the city committee, which actually is composed of five distinct wards, you know, each one corresponding to the voting ward of Gloucester. Each ward has its own chair. So we have five wards composed of approximately 120 to 140 members. I think each ward can have up to 35 members, and we're getting fairly close to our quota for some of these wards. But people are elected in two different ways. One is every 4 years there's the presidential primary, and the Gloucester clerk, or you know, whoever runs the elections, puts on the ballot for each ward the names of everybody wishing to be elected to the city committee. And so this happens regularly, and many people may not even notice it, but we, you know, our names were all on the ballot And then if our quota hasn't been filled, more members are elected at each of our monthly meetings. So we have monthly meetings, and for the past several years, we've been having them at the Gloucester House restaurant. So we have a little social hour. We have food provided if anyone wants it. We have a featured speaker. We have opportunities for discussion. And then every 2 years, if we can raise enough money, we actually rent space for the campaign headquarters.
Okay.
And we've done this, I think, steadily since I've been in Gloucester. And so, of course, the last campaign headquarters that we had was we rented space next to Walgreens, and we had teams of volunteers to staff it. I think it was pretty much 7 days a week, almost every day. And then we had phone banks, and we had volunteers who went to canvass. In this last election, they went up to New Hampshire because that was the most dire need to do canvassing in New Hampshire. Let's see. We also have an annual brunch. This year, our featured speakers are going to be Ed Markey, two interesting candidates for governor, Mayor Seti Warren from Newton, Jay Gonzalez, I think who's a congressman, but I'm not sure. Anyway, they're all coming to the brunch, which will be held on April 30th at the Elks. We have a monthly cable news or cable program called Democratic Dialogue. And this has been going on for about 10 years, and episodes can be seen on the Internet.
Okay.
This is KPN-TV.
Okay.
I'll
have to link to that.
Yeah, we have a newsletter, we have a website, and now we have several social media platforms.
I was recently talking to a mayor in the area who is a Democrat, and the mayor was actually bemoaning the fact that there's not a lot of new infusion into the Democratic delegation to Washington. And one of the names that was mentioned was Senator Markey. He's been around for a long, long time. And is it often, I know it's not often, but when might it occur that a Democrat might challenge an incumbent Democrat for whatever position? Does that happen at the state level, at the local level, or... And I'll ask another question about that, but, you know.
Sure. Well, the most interesting example of that was when we had longtime Congressman John Tierney challenged by newcomer Seth Moulton. And there were a number of people, including myself, who were very conflicted, I think.
Sure.
But we, I think that Seth Moulton won the primary. And there was, I would say, with very, very few defections, a coalescing around the candidate who won, Seth Moulton. John Tierney's finance chair also went over to the other side, and I think we are all very, very thrilled about, you know, the election and the ability of at least all the Democrats that I know, to rally around the new person and support him. So that's just one example. I don't know that it would happen exactly that way in every case, but,
I've said many times when I interview school committee candidates and city council candidates and mayoral candidates, I've always been impressed by the fact that locally, most of the time, you don't know who was a Democrat or who was a Republican on the local level, and local government seems to work very well. That sort of changed with the last election and the last local election I'm talking about, and that there was some lines drawn that I hadn't seen before. How do you look at that?
Okay, this is a subject that we've actually discussed. You know, as a committee, we even have kind of a policy on this very topic that we've pretty much adhered to. And I think where it gets interesting is. Clearly, as a party, we want to promote Democrats to run for public office or facilitate or encourage them. Mm-hmm. What happens when there are one or more Democrats running for the same office locally? What we've done in the past, by the way, and I should back off or back up first and say that we have never as a party officially endorsed any candidates for local office. And this is to avoid partisanship at the local level. We all live here. We have to get along, work together. And I think we've never done this, officially endorsed anyone as a committee. Individuals, however, are very much free to campaign or work on the campaigns for individual candidates. Sometimes, most years, when there is a local election, what we might do is to have a meeting or part of a meeting devoted to 3-minute speeches by any local candidate running for office who is a Democrat. We don't invite unenrolled, and we don't invite members of, of people who are registered as Republicans. And that allows our membership to see the different candidates and make up their own minds as to who to support. And that's pretty much all we do, meaning how to, official involvement in local elections.
Okay. Well, that brings us to present day, I guess, and the spectacle that's going on in Washington is historic, I think, on many different levels, but the media's involvement, social media in particular, it's taken on a whole new aspect when dealing with elections locally and just climbing the ladder. Social media is so much a part of getting out information, true or false. And does the local Gloucester committee how do you use that or deal with it?
Okay. Well, we actually have one of our members, or appointed by me as our social media chair. And so she is a young woman, lives in Magnolia.
That's necessary. They got to be young to do this.
They have to be young. She has a little group of people who advise her. And we have essentially two Facebook pages. And I'm still learning the difference between pages, events, closed and open membership. But what I think we have is an official Facebook page for the Gloucester Democratic City Committee. And we try to keep it for posting official events, announcements of say, meetings, pictures from events. We have a public service arm that, for example, raised nearly 2,000 tons of protein for the food pantry on Martin Luther King Day weekend. So we would post pictures of that event, for example. We also have a moderated forum for discussion called Cape Ann Democrats. Mm-hmm. And because of our work with campaigns, which are always coordinated campaigns, and they're they're always joint with three other communities, Essex, Rockport, and Manchester. So we have a pretty wide email list, and we invite those people to participate either in our monthly meeting or on social media. And so there's open discussions on that Cape Ann Democrats page. I mean, when I say it's moderated, it doesn't ever get out of hand or very inappropriate, but it's very useful because I think that's one way that members can post events that really relate to other activist groups. There are probably upwards of 20 activist groups, all focusing on a sort of a different theme, that are now very active in the 6th Congressional District. And we're trying to keep abreast of what they're doing, and many times at our monthly meeting, people will report from one of those groups.
Senator Bruce Tarr is a good friend of mine, former student of mine, mm-hmm. and Anna Margaret Ferranti, I believe, is also a former student of mine and a friend of mine. And I always am amazed how well left and right works together in this area.
is there, well, and to preface what I'm the question, I am going to, Josh Arnold was asking if we could do a debate between a Democrat and a Republican on his program on Trending Now, and at first I said yes, and I've changed that now. I don't want a debate. What I want to do is I want to have a Democrat and a Republican come together in a sitting face-to-face where they can tell us how they can work together. One of the requisites I would have for electing someone nationally would be to say, okay, how are you going to work with the other side? If you're a Republican, how are you going to work with the Democrats? If you're a Democrat, how are you going to work with Republicans? So I'm going to ask that those two people do that. It seems to me that on a national level, it's not happening. You go out, you go out with friends, and you dare not say things if you know that person has an opposite political view than you do. You don't want to say anything because it's such a hot topic. How has that impacted the local Democratic committee? And I know that each side will say, well, yeah, we want to work with the other side.
I think that many of us are trying to find ways to promote progressive legislation in Massachusetts. Obviously, we don't have an entirely blue state. And locally, of course, we do have Senator Tarr, and, you know, then we have the governor, Charlie Baker, who I think tries to adhere, and probably Bruce as well, to the old ideal of the Republican Party in Massachusetts, the traditional, you know, the Elliot Richardsons, the reasonable, somewhat, you know, fiscally conservative Republicans. And I have a lot of respect for those people and those people who want to follow that tradition. But I strongly believe that if they're not aware of what has happened to their party, and, you know, what is happening, you know, every day it keeps changing. I think they need to reexamine their allegiances as just sane, you know, responsible citizens. Because it doesn't make any sense for someone to adhere strictly to a party line under all circumstances. And I know they're, you know, they can become very good tap dancers, to try to, you know, it depends on who their audience is and what people say. But I think at a certain point, those affiliations, you know, locally, I mean, if they're running for local office or running again to be reelected to offices, that their, you know, public affiliations do matter, will matter, and there may be people willing to challenge these, you know, candidates in the forthcoming elections. And so, you know, I think that that's all I can say. I think if Democrats locally are trying to work out a specific issue that relates to our quality of life or funding, you know, locally, and the office holder happens to be Republican, I think we're more than willing to work with that person. It's, you know, things change a little bit when it comes to the, you know, the next campaign.
Well, and also level by level, a local level it works, on a state level it works, and then you kick it upstairs and it doesn't work. So, you know, it's all relative. But who was it, Tip O'Neill, that said all politics is local?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think we're, you know, this is an one thing that's happened with the Democrats is that we're getting more and more people interested in what I would call the long haul, and let's, you know, focus on cross-cutting issues. And the long haul for me is, okay, we have this two-party system right now. It's not perfect. Neither party is perfect. I think one is definitely better than the other.
Of course you do.
however, you know, and should changes be made in our system of governance and our electoral system? Of course they should, and they can, and I'm definitely willing to work on that. But as long as we have two dominant parties and elections that seem to be pretty much controlled by those parties, or at least the candidate selection process is controlled, I think, you know, as a person who is interested in numbers, I focus on, you know, what is the likely outcome depending on what you do. And that's why I personally think people who say, well, you know, I'm a principled voter, and my feelings and principles, you know, are the most important thing, I would say in response, well, actually, they're not, because if you think about the math, the numbers, what's likely to happen if you vote, say, for the Green Party candidate, you know, then it's not just your feelings, it's the whole country.
Okay. Well, my final question and a follow-up to that would be, it's a matter of education, I think, for many people, because for the most part, politics, when you talk about it locally, over a cup of coffee in your own house, it is personal feelings. Whereas there are many, there's much information that needs to be learned, but the information needs to be correct.
Yes, I'm a very strong adherent to that philosophy. Just to give you an example, you know, a lot of information that we think is true, meaning, you know, from the newspaper or even from the government, I mean, we still have to look at other independent sources. And, I mean, I'll just throw out one example, since this was from something I was very interested in, food policy and information about nutrition. Is, you know, comes from published scientific journals, experiments from the government, and there's one organization that consistently has refused to accept money from the government or from any industry source, and that's something called Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, and for about 30 years they have published something called the Nutrition Action Newsletter, and they will only give out advice that they think is based on the latest scientific information. And they review it, they compile it, they look at multiple sources, and they change over time depending on the latest evidence. So, you know, anyway, I'm a subscriber.
Okay.
It's just an example of one group that has, you know, decides they really need to stick to the facts.
And the fact that there's no outside money influencing it is what you're saying is very important. Well, Karen, anything else you'd like to mention?
Well, we have an annual brunch coming up. If there are any Democrats or people who are leaning in that direction who would like to come, there's tickets available on our website, GloucesterDemocrats.org. We have monthly meetings, and this summer we have we'll be at the Sidewalk Bazaar. We'll be engaged in some voter registration and voter education efforts, maybe canvassing, and we hope to work closely with a new group at the high school that just started a Democratic club. So we're younger people are joining, which is what I.
As we've talked to the other side, I hope we can talk with you again also.
Certainly. I'd love to do that.
Thank you very much.